that knowledge, you know, when we talk about animals, we talk about instinct. Yeah. This information gets passed down and passed down and passed down, and it's baked into our bones. And that's why when I teach herbalism, I talk about we are waking up that wisdom. It's something that's within us. It's something that we don't have to learn so much as, you know, facts and figures and things to memorize, as something that we just need to resurface in our consciousness.
Welcome, beautiful soul, to the Weaving the Wild podcast. In this space, we are reclaiming and remembering the wildish wisdom and knowledge that lies deep within our bones, and reconnecting to those parts of ourselves that are both ancient and familiar. We talk about it all, awakening our collective wildness and dropping back into our bodies, honoring our cyclical rhythms, connecting to our roots, embracing our intuitive nature, and living embodied within the feminine. I'm Rachel Hodgins, and I'm honored to be walking this path beside you. Let's dive in. Megan Rhodes is a qualified herbalist who has helped over 80 women start living herbalism and making healthier, safer solutions for themselves and their families a reality. As the founder of Rhodes Roots and Remedies, she has written 10 course books. She has authored the books Easy Herbal Remedies for Infants and Slow Infused Self-Care. And she's also developed a beautiful and unique four-season sensory-based herbalism course and journey called Awaken Herbal Wisdom. It sounds amazing. Megan's practice of herbalism is rooted in the belief that we must remember, reclaim, and relearn our knowledge of our bodies, our autonomy, and how to work with plant medicine in order to bring that control of our own health back into our families and homes for a more sustainable future, both for ourselves and the planet. And I am so excited to share with you this conversation today. I suggest you grab yourself a cuppa, get cozy, or settle into like some sort of activity where you can really just soak in the whole conversation in one sitting. It is worth it. It's so beautiful. Megan is such a beautiful source of knowledge, and she just has this knack for sharing what might normally seem overwhelming in a really palatable and accessible way. In this conversation, you'll find some really practical and tangible tips and practices, herbal allies to work with. I love how Megan invites you to connect with the medicinal properties of a plant. We often hear about connecting to the spirit and the energetic, you know, sort of essence of a plant. But Megan also shares about how you can literally connect to the medicinal properties of a plant ally, and the fact that you really can do that through your own senses. You actually have the ability to identify how a plant might benefit you without any books or trainings or external teachers. That knowledge already lives within you. It's rooted there. And Megan shares how you can do this in this episode. She also shares some of her favorite ways to use herbs in her kitchen and her life. And then we dive even deeper into the ancestral connection that we have with our plant allies. We talk about our evolutionary relationship to plants. Megan says about how it is baked into our DNA, into our bones. We also talk about our own relationship to sensation in the body and why our fear of discomfort and pain is also really important to talk about in conversations such as this, as we are reclaiming and remembering sovereign health and wellness, whether it be through the lens of plant allies or anything else. This conversation around how we relate to the sensations in our body and the stories that we hold around them is really important. This is a very rich conversation. We cover a lot of ground, and I cannot wait for you to dive in. Remember to share, take a screenshot and tag us at The Rachel Hodgins, and Megan is at Rhodes Roots and Remedies. You'll find the details and the links for our Instagrams in the show notes, as well as any books and resources that we mentioned throughout the show. All of that will be there waiting for you in the show notes. And don't forget to leave a rating and review. It takes but a moment, but it has a huge impact for the show. So if you've listened to the show for a little bit and you haven't yet left a review, it would mean the world to me if you just take a minute or two. It's literally all it takes to leave a couple of words and those 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. Okay, without any further ado, let's bring on Megan and dive on in. Welcome to the show, Megan.
Thank you.
I feel so much magic already brewing for what this conversation is going to be.
Yes.
I would really like to start, if you could share a little bit about your journey, I suppose, in terms of like what's led you to this work today. Have you always been kind of connected to plants and healing, or has this kind of been something that's revealed itself or reawakened within you along your journey?
Yeah, so this is, I think my father's passed on now, bless him, but, you know, if he saw me now, he would say, who are you and what have you done with my daughter? I did not grow up particularly connected to nature. I grew up in the suburbs of Florida. Sort of the maximum outdoorsy stuff we did was my mum going to the DIY shop to get the little annuals, the pansies or whatever, and she would plant them out, and then I had sort of mandatory outside playtime, actually. I was always inside reading. But we grew up quite in a sort of normal kind of mainstream way, in the sense of, you know, we had some home cooked food, we had processed food, you know, so that just stuff we weren't aware of. But then my mum started looking into natural ways in terms of food and remedies to support our family health. And as she learned, I learned. So I remember getting sort of taken to the health food stores, it was called back then. And, you know, it had that particular smell and it had that fake chocolate, you know, the carob, right? Which I still like won't eat.
Yes.
And just thinking, okay, what is this? But as I grew up, I started understanding that the way my digestion worked, or rather didn't work, wasn't actually normal, wasn't healthy, because that was just my norm. So when I was at uni, I started looking into, okay, how do I need to support myself? How do I need to support my gut? And then things sort of crashed a bit in my mid-20s. I was working in corporate tech in London, and I was really not well, and my manager looked at me and said, I don't know what's wrong with you, but I think you need to go home and I think you need to get some help, and just don't worry about your emails, which was really kind of him. And that just got me on this journey of, okay, I want, you know, natural, I want no chemicals, I want to get to the root of things. And it took me a couple of tries. I went to a few different practitioners before I landed on herbalism, herbal medicine. And I remember reading the description, because it was for a Four Seasons workshop. And I read the description and I was like, ah, oh, this is what I'm looking for. Yes, this is, because I didn't even know the word for it, you know. And that took me on this journey of, whoa, I mean, the amazing things that working with medicinal plants can do to heal our bodies, to support our bodies. It was quite a long journey of being out of balance and being in poor health. And not till really my late 20s that I managed to find the puzzle pieces to get everything back in balance. And then, of course, once you figure that out, you just like Everyone needs to know about this. This is a massive secret we're all sitting on. I mean, I'm looking out my very rainy Yorkshire grey autumnal window, and I've got hedgerows chock full of hawthorn. And I just, every time I look out this window, I'm like, it's free medicine. It's right there. So, yeah, that's sort of my journey. And now, you know, to go from Florida suburbs to middle of nowhere, you know, Yorkshire countryside, on a small holding, growing as much as we can of our own, you know, making all my own toiletries and cleaning supplies and all of these things. It's been a bit of a ride, but a fun one.
I love it so much. Thank you for sharing. And isn't it funny how it's like where you find yourself at any given moment, especially when you've been on, you know, such a significant, for want of a better word, you know, healing journey, where it's just like life feels like this feels normal. It feels right. And yet when you really do look back, it's such a contrast. Like you really, you don't, you know, you kind of take for granted how you really live now, I suppose, and like the lessons that you've learned now. And just this piece, you know, I'm still like in so many, I'm still only just at the start of my journey of like really connecting with plant medicine and plant allies is probably more how I like to refer to them. But when you start to learn and you start like your eyes just start opening, like when you're just outside at any given moment, your eyes just start like, oh, there's, you know, yarrow, or that, oh, there's like dock, or, you know, cleavers or whatever it may be. And you just start like it's everywhere and it's here at our fingertips. Like you said, it's this little gift, like this secret gift that we're sitting on. And this conversation that we're having today is so woven with the innate kind of connection that we have, particularly as women, but as human beings in general. This innate connection that we have to plants and to herbs. And I'd love to maybe kind of start there if I pass this to you, and just I'd love to kind of unpack this a little bit around our, you know, this connection between plant medicine, herbal allies, and our deeper, more innate, intuitive connection and feminine power, I want to say.
It's a big conversation. And it goes back to the beginning of humanity, really. I mean, if you think about, you know, the very first humans, bless them, the brave and the bold, right? Can you imagine wandering around? And I always have this sort of almost like a comic strip in my mind of like, you know, one early human says to another, you put it in your mouth and see what happens. No, you put it in your mouth and see what happens. Or you put it on your body. So, you know, we are the descendants of the ones who ate the things that were edible. But that knowledge, you know, when we talk about animals, we talk about instinct. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Why is there that instinct? It's baked in, it's passed down in their biologies. So you think about the early humans who are like, go on, you eat it. No, you eat it. They learned what was safe. They observed the world around them. They observed, I mean, you know, they didn't have phones and whatever to distract themselves. And there was a lot more, you know, survival at stake. Observing the world around them, watching the other creatures in nature, because we are not part of nature, we are nature, just like the animals, just like the insects, just like the plants, which is how we're all able to support each other, because we are kin, we're all connected, we are the same stuff. So those early humans learning what was safe, and then watching the animals and going, okay, that one's munching on this right now. And I've noticed that one's been feeling a bit, you know, this, that. I mean, they wouldn't have said under the weather, but, you know, a bit under the weather, what have you. and connecting those dots. And then as that information was passed down through oral tradition, through experience, through living in community, then you start to have people going, okay, well, how can we best engage with this plant? What's the most supportive way? Do we extract it in this way? Can we preserve it across the seasons so that it's not just, you know, it's only available in the spring, for example, so we've got more access to it when we might need it? This information gets passed down and passed down and passed down, and it's baked into our bones. And that's why when I teach herbalism, I talk about we are waking up that wisdom that's in us. I cannot tell you how many times I've taught a workshop or a course, and we always go in through taste. We start with taste because that kicks off biological processes that you don't even have to know exist, and they're going to happen anyway. And we taste the herbs, and I say, okay, where does it go in the body? How are you feeling? What sensations have you got? What do you think this plant might support in your body? And everybody just kind of goes with it, and we feel into it. And then I read them sort of, you know, the quote unquote, the list of here's what it quote unquote does, right? Mm-hmm. This plant does this, 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 this. And everybody goes, I was right. I go, yeah. And I go, do you know, I don't know how, but I know that. That makes sense. I feel like I just knew that. Mm. And it's because it's in us. You know, you eat a herb, it has a certain taste, just like anything else you eat. It kicks off processes in the body because our bodies know, because our bodies have been engaging with plant medicine, which is the original medicine since literally the dawn of time, or at least, you know, dawn of humankind, and the rest of nature before that. So it's something that's within us. It's something that we don't have to learn so much as, you know, facts and figures and things to memorize, as something that we just need to resurface in our consciousness. Mm. And part of it is because we've got really distracted in our modern lives. Part of it is because we've got this constant barrage of marketing, of everything, food marketing, pharma marketing, all kinds of, you know, various lifestyle marketing, everything that says buy this, do this, make your life easier, fix that problem. But we're waking up that sense in our bodies that says, okay, this just feels like it's a message that's telling me this is out of balance, and I just need a bit of help. I need a friend. I need an ally. I need a loved one to just tip me back into even keel and refocus and reprioritize. And that's what I love about all of this stuff. It gets you listening to yourself again. Mm-hmm. And when you're listening to yourself, you're listening to all of nature because it's all the same thing.
Mm. You literally just put into it so beautifully in such a practical, like both rational and entirely like juicy feminine way as well. Mm-hmm. This piece that I think, because I love as well that you bring in this like essentially like this kind of disconnect, I suppose, that we have to our own intuitive knowing. And so much of that is fear. Like when we think of herbal medicine and we think, oh, am I allowed to take that? Can I take that? How much should I take? Like we are in so many ways. We're not used to holding the power, I suppose, in our own hands. We seek an authority to tell us what to do. Mm-hmm. We seek someone to tell us how essentially to look after ourselves. So we don't, not even necessarily so we don't have to, but essentially that's what it comes down to. It's like, I don't know how, I can't, someone has to do this for me. And so like you said, and that whether or not this like, you know, that's just like from our own sort of disconnect from our own inner authority and connection, whether we're even conscious of the fact that so much of this disconnect is
created and written by consumerism and capitalism, just to keep us, you know, buying essentially products. That's a whole other conversation, but there's something that has to happen, right? There's something that has to happen for us to become our own healer, I suppose you might say, to be able to come to a place where we know how to simply tune into the body, our body, and know what it needs, even like as a first simple step, right? As opposed to just like, I've got a cough, like
make it stop,
antibiotics or something, like, you know what I mean, like just going straight to the doctor, tuning in and learning like, okay, how does this cough feel, like what kind of cough is this, and learning then, you know, oh, it's kind of like really dry and really tickly, like and when we think of that, like, well, what would a dry tickly cough need? Like, maybe some moisture, maybe something, you know, something, I'm trying to think of the right word and I can't right now, but, you know, when we start to tune into the body and our symptoms and the way that our body is communicating to us, and this is so practical, this isn't even like, I want to say intuitive, it's just learning to tune into the body. Then when we start to gather and remember, and as you said, sort of like resurface this like ancient wisdom that's been learned over a long, 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 long period of time, of like, this plant has this property, this plant is used for this, this, and this. Yeah, this resurfacing of knowledge just pairs with our own kind of own, like tuning into our own kind of body's messages. And the piece that I just love as you're sharing is like, this isn't, I'm going to say quote unquote woo-woo. It's the most real thing there is, right?
Yeah.
This isn't just thousands of years. This isn't thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of years of learned and observed evidence, right? Which becomes, as you sort of said, like baked into our biology in the same way that a small deer knows to go and eat that grass. You know, because it, why wouldn't it? That's, you know, it knows exactly what to do and where to go. And it's able to follow its mom, I suppose, but it has that instinct as well. And when we are, what I'm sort of getting from you is when we are exposed, tasting, smelling, feeling even to a degree, certain plants, our bodies respond.
Yes.
Because they're animals. Like, it's an animal body responding.
Exactly.
And you mentioned taste as like the place to start. And can we kind of dive into that a little bit more? When you sort of, when we've been talking before we hit record, you were talking about these key seven tastes. And I know we may not be able to go into all of them, but can we talk about taste and how this may be kind of like the in, I suppose, to start scratching kind of beneath the surface a little bit and really awakening this like knowledge and this wisdom of plant medicine that we already hold within us.
Yeah, definitely. And it's a great entry point into refamiliarizing yourself with herbs. Because, you know, like we're saying, it's innate. The body just responds to it. And it's practical. Like you said, it's tangible. You taste something. If you would taste a bitter herb, you know that herb is bitter. You don't necessarily know everything else that's happening, but that herb is bitter and you're aware of it.
Oh, yeah.
So the seven tastes are bitter, astringent, salty, aromatic or pungent, mucilaginous, which is always fun to say, sour, and sweet. And they all have a lot of depth to them. So yeah, maybe we'll just touch on a couple because so people don't feel like they've got to go run and grab a notebook or something. So let's talk about aromatic or pungent, because that's what's in your kitchen right now all of those culinary herbs and spices, the oreganos, the rosemaries, the thyme, the sage, all of it. Those herbs that have that real aroma to them, they are incredibly powerful. There's a reason why we put them on our food liberally. There's a reason why they've always gone on a Sunday roast. It's not just because, you know, a roast chicken and potatoes taste great with rosemary and sage on it. It's practical. I mean, it's also because it tastes great, but it's practical. These herbs and spices, when you get that aromatic component, that means that it's really rich in volatile oils. And that's what gets distilled and skimmed off and bottled up as essential oils. And they are highly antimicrobial. So all the antis, as I say, antifungal, antiviral, antibacterial, antimicrobial, it's like these four antis who just sort of hang out and make sure that you don't get sick from your food. But if you think about it, you know, before the days of refrigeration, you know, if you had a family and you had this meat available to you and that was your nourishment, you were going to eat it, even if it was maybe slightly on the turn or you weren't exactly sure if it was. Mm-hmm. So putting all of those culinary herbs and spices, those aromatic pungent herbs, helped to mitigate any microbes that were starting to brew on it. And most of them, you know, when you think of the taste of like rosemary and thyme, you know, they're warming, right? They warm the digestive fire. So they tell the gut, you know, you taste it in the mouth. That triggers everything off in the body that says, ooh, hello, gut, food is incoming. Warm up that fire. Let's get cooking because we've got stuff in here that we need coming that we need to process. It gets the bile going in the liver. So the liver goes, oh yeah, okay, I'm going to need to start working with some nutrients to absorb and send through the body. Oh, there are going to be some, you know, bits that the body doesn't need to keep. So we'll send those through. So it's waking everything up. And the ones that are warming then are getting the body going, ooh, right, warming. Okay, let's get the blood flowing to the fingers and the toes. Let's keep us warm. So, you know, traditionally, you're not going to have a big, quote unquote, you know, good old English Sunday roast in the height of summer, which granted is like 2 days in this country. I'm originally from Florida. This summer has been insufficient, so shall we say. I'm not quite over it yet. But you're not going to have a really hot, warming meal in the height of summer. You're going to have it in autumn. You're going to have it in winter. You're going to have it as, you know, spring is still coming into play and it's still chilly, you know, keeping everything warm. So whenever you taste an aromatic or pungent culinary herb or spice, you might have a little mini herb garden, you might have a pot on your windowsill in your kitchen, you might have it dried and flaked and bought from the shop, you know, in one of those little shaker bottles, it doesn't matter. You smell that, you know the body is getting the digestion going and there are antimicrobial processes at play, which means you don't have to memorize every single thing that each of those individual herbs can quote unquote do. If somebody's got a cold, if somebody's got, you know, a thing brewing and it's cold and it's germy, then break out your culinary herbs and spices. Make a tea, make a foot bath, make the tea and pour it in a bath if you feel like getting in it, depending on, you know, what kind of cold you've got. Put it in your soups, put it in your cooking, or even better, if you know, something's going round, the kid, you know, it's back to school season, and which means like everybody's picking up that great wave of germs that comes through, you know, right? Extra culinary herbs and spices on everything we are eating right now, breakfast, lunch, and dinner to help, you know, meet any microbes and show them kindly the way out. They do not need to take up residence because we are healthy here. We are well balanced. So that's a great starting point. Another really interesting one is the astringent taste. So that's it's not so much a taste as a feeling. When you have it in your mouth, the inside of your mouth goes, sort of dries up, and then the saliva kicks in afterwards, right? Mm-hmm. We often hear of astringent as in, like, you know, facial toners, like, oh, it's astringent and I'm toning my pores and everything's all nice and, you know, toned and what have you. Well, it does do that. So the astringent taste, when it's taken into the body or applied to the body, it tightens the pores. It tightens the mucous membranes. So if you think about something like leaky gut, for example, where the gut lining's been worn down and you've started to get perforations, things that you're taking in through the digestive system are then leaking out of the digestive system elsewhere in the body where it doesn't need to be going. Astringent herbs to help tighten up those gaps, pull them together. But interestingly, that creates, in the long term, more suppleness, more flexibility. Because if you think of like a leather water bag that you might have, and I think we're, you know, okay, we're Bedouins in the desert now. We've got our camels, we've got our, you know, the sun is blazing, what have you. And you've got this leather water pouch. It's not been treated with waterproofing chemicals. It's not plastic, but it holds the water. How? Because it's gone through a process of being exposed to natural astringent compounds that tighten the pores of that skin. Tighten it and tighten it and tighten it. And then, as the process carries on, they get softer and more flexible and more supple. So it can retain the water. So you end up more hydrated in the long run because you're not losing water you don't need to be losing. And bend and flex and move and be soft. So that whole process, think about that, like think of if your stomach was that leather water pouch and how robust and flexible, keeping all the good things in that need to be kept in, but not letting things leak out that don't need to. And that's just by tasting astringent herbs. You have an astringent herb, the body starts kicking off that process. You don't have to do anything in order for that to sink in. What's another good taste? I was going to go with sweet, but because I know you're coming into spring, let's do salty, because that's the springtime taste.
Love it.
But it's not salty like table salt. It's not like, oh, you know, I've got my Celtic sea salt or my Himalayan pink salt, or, you know, whichever sort of mineral rich, non-processed and denuded salt you've got. It's more like the taste of green, which may sound a bit funny, but when you taste, it's like that grassy, you know, when you had some spinach or something, you go, oh, this just tastes green. That green taste lets your body know that this thing that you're bringing into yourself is full of minerals, usually lots of iron, there'll be magnesium, there'll be calcium, there'll be all sorts, but it's really, really rich in minerals, which means the body is remineralizing itself when you're taking that in, and it's enabling your body then to flush out anything that's been stagnant that you don't need sitting in there anymore. So the terminology we use is it's a diuretic, quote unquote. But it helps to flush things through. Now, interestingly, a lot of pharmaceutical diuretic drugs are then prescribed with a synthetic potassium supplement alongside, because when you're flushing out your system quite thoroughly, you can lose a lot of potassium. And when that balance gets thrown out, it impacts the urinary tract, and then if we're working backwards, up to the heart. So you don't want to compromise that, obviously. So usually diuretic drugs are prescribed with potassium supplements. Now here's the interesting thing. Dandelion, which is a bitter herb and it's a salty herb, it's got all of these properties. It'll help flush things out, cleanse things, and it's incredibly rich in potassium. So nature's just got, yeah, I've got you covered. I've pre-packaged everything in a nice complete bundle, which is why I love working with the whole plant rather than having an extract here, an extract there, or, you know, oh, this is the particular medicinal compound. We have now isolated it in a lab and then squished it into a pill and trademarked it. Because dandelions put everything all together. So you don't have to worry about, oh, do I need to, you know, supplement with extra potassium when I'm taking this? You're getting the minerals in, you're getting the gunk out, and everything stays in balance. Because if all the different components of nature, ourselves included, didn't have baked into them the complete picture, the full balance, then nothing would be in balance. I mean, we're all part of the ecosystem. We're all interwoven. So therefore, when one bit's out of balance, another bit's out of balance. But everything comes ready to go. You know, I went to a workshop at a herbalism conference ages ago. And the herbalist who was running the workshop said, you know, all of nature has this innate impetus to heal within it. You know, a branch falls off a tree because there's been a storm, right? The tree doesn't stand there going, oh, why did I choose as an acorn to grow in this place? I should have known better. It's my own fault. You know, like all of this and like, oh no, and now I've lost this branch. And will any bird ever want to nest in me again? You know, I mean, all of that, right? Which is what we do as humans, right? Even if it's just like you catch a cold and then you go, oh, how did I do this? I've clearly not been eating perfectly. You know, we do all of that, right? But the tree doesn't do that. The tree just keeps growing. It might generate some resin to heal a patch and to protect it from further infection. You know, I've had trees in our orchard that they just split in half. And you think, okay, well, that thing's dead. And yet the spring comes and the bit that's laying half on the ground and barely attached to the rest of the tree is still flowering. It just carries on. And we're also nature. You know, what the question was then posed in this workshop, what is stopping you from allowing yourself to heal? And that's always stuck with me. Because boy, we can just get in our way. But then you work with some of the herbs and your body goes, oh great, okay, I've got an aromatic herb coming, I've got a salty herb coming, I've got an astringent herb coming, I know what to do. I can get back into balance. We just have to get out of the way a bit.
Oh, I love it. I wonder before I have, there's a question that's like in what you just shared that I am excited to ask, but I wonder if you could give an example. I know, so you sort of shared that kind of salty is green, so thinking of like spinach or dandelion to as well as being bitter, and you know, the more aromatic pungent ones being your typical kind of culinary herbs that you'll find dried and flavoring your food. Is there an example of an astringent herb that you might be able to share as well?
Yeah, definitely. So astringent herbs, I mean, there are all sorts. Yarrow's a really nice one. Yeah, it's got so many components to it, but yarrow gives that tightening impact, that pulling things together, and it's a really, really common hedgerow plant. You know, there are all kinds of ornamental varieties as well, but the hedgerow one is the one you want to go for. It's astringent. It's an incredibly ancient herb, actually. They've found yarrow in the teeth of Neanderthal skulls from 60,000 years ago. You talk about field testing medicine, right? Oh, we've had a couple decades. We've tested this new drug in a lab. No, no, no. Yarrow's been around since 60,000 years ago, being worked with medicinally, you know. And then you'll find other herbs in, like, you know, the pyramids and whatnot. And you think, well, if it was good enough for King Tut, it's good enough for me.
I love it. That's fascinating because I'd never really thought of like I have yarrow in my garden that I've grown from seed. But I know that it has so many incredible properties. And the one that just automatically comes to my mind is that it helps to stop bleeding. If you know, if you've like cut your finger or something like that, it can help to like stop blood. But that kind of also makes sense in the way you've described astringent, of like it like closes everything up. It like helps to like I just love if it, unfortunately podcasts aren't a visual medium, but every time Megan or I just go, we're doing this like little contract
hand gesture.
But yeah, I love that. And you know, something that I really, really appreciate about what you've shared, and I think is it's the approach that's always resonated with me and the teachers and people who I've kind of looked to for plant medicine and learning it about plant allies, is this doesn't need to be complicated. Bring the herbs into your home, basically. Bring them into your kitchen. And I think that's the place to start. And I think that's, it's, I just love what you've shared in that, when you understand or just learn the simple basics of like, when you put something on your tongue, what happens basically? Like when you have, you know, you place a bitter herb on your tongue, what happens in your mouth and how does your body respond? And it doesn't need to be too much more complicated than just weaving them into your meals and into, you know, even just your drinks, you know, a tea if you want to. And from there, just building a relationship really with them. I wonder if you might share just a few more like of your favorite ways of like weaving the herbs into. I'd love to keep it to the kitchen, like even if we bring in some of the other sort of tastes and flavors, I suppose, but like what are some of your favorite ways of like, or favorite herbs to bring into your kitchen?
Oh, it's always such a hard question, you know, because then you go, I love all of them. Do you know, I love working with herbs as teas. I love including them in cooking. And I really like doing them as slow infused oils. Less so, I don't tend to, you can obviously infuse oils with herbs for cooking, but I like to use them topically. So if it's sort of body oiling, or then, you know, you making any kind of balms and things like that. The favorites, there's nowhere I could start. I mean, we are, we're coming into autumn in the UK, so the marshmallow root is, you know, getting ready to harvest, and the dandelion root, all the roots. And then, you know, the flip side, when the spring happens, I'm always looking out my window waiting for when the cleavers are going to come up, because that's like the start of the herbal medicine year. And then I love bringing those into the kitchen. And doing a cold infusion, just put the cleavers in some, you know, nice filtered water. You could put a bit of lemon or a bit of ginger if it's still chilly out, so it's not too cooling. I love doing that every spring. Let it infuse for a couple of hours. Overnight is best. And then just start drinking it. And then I just top up that pitcher of water every time I take some out. It's such a lovely spring sort of like flush through, without kind of going into the, you know, the whole detox thing, because there's a lot of emphasis on detox but not as much on the nourishing afterwards. And that's where the root herbs come in. So marshmallow root and astragalus, dandelion root still got that bitter compound to it and is brilliant for supporting the liver, as all bitter herbs are. So I work with that one quite a bit. Nettles, of course. I mean, how could you not? Oh, nettles everywhere. I make a really nice slow infused nettle oil to use topically in my little mini herbalist. I remember the first time I gave that to her, and I squirted it in her hands, and she looked at it and she goes, "Ooh, it's green. And I said, yeah. And then she, and I didn't tell her to do any of this. She's not seen me do this. It's instinct, right? She looks at the color, then she brings it straight to her nose and she goes, and she smells it. And she goes, oh, it smells like soil. And I'm like, yes, yes, it does. And then she starts rubbing it into her little smushy feet. And she goes, mmm. And I'm just sat there going, this morning I am winning as a mother. Yes, I have done it this morning. The rest of the day could go to pot is fine because she is covering her body in nettle infused oil. This is great. Calendula is another really nice one. It's one of my favorites. And it traditionally was used by sort of medieval peasants to include in their autumnal soups and broths. Because we think of calendula often as, you know, topically and as a wound healer, which it is. It's excellent for externally and internally. But it's also a gentle, warming lymphatic. So it's great to, you know, when you've had a cold and it just kind of, there's that last, those last dregs that are just not shifting. You're like, I feel okay, but there's still that bit of like, yeah, left. Calendula helps to just warm from the core out, get that little bit of warm through going to shift and clear things out. So it's a nice, you know, late summer, early autumn lymphatic herb, whereas a lot of them tend to be the salty ones that you get in spring. I think it's absolutely brilliant for that. So I could go on for ages about all the different herbs, so I won't say any more.
That makes me really excited. I would never have really thought of calendula in that way or using it in soups, but I'm totally going to like just log that away. And you know, I mean, we're in spring, I can do it whenever I want, but I feel like that would be such an autumnal vibe as well. And I think that calendula is a great plant to, I mean, a lot of the ones that you sort of shared with are anyway, but calendula is a very easy plant to grow. It kind of grows itself and it will seed itself as well. It'll keep coming up. But it's a very happy plant. It's a very like welcoming plant. Yeah, it's just one of those plants that kind of just like fills my garden in the most beautiful way. And its medicine is just so beautiful. And you can use it. Like you've just opened my world up with like soups, but like you can, you know, you can use it in an oil, you can use it in steams, you can use it, as you said, you know, basically topically and internally. Like in food and in, you know, tea or however else you want to use it. And so many of these plant allies are like that, where you can, you know, that you can really relate to them and build a relationship to them in so many different ways. But I just want to circle back. Thank you so much for sharing that, because I just like, I froth over, just like, tell me all about the plants and the ways that you use them, and I just get excited. So thank you for that. And I know that so many listening are like, oh, just want to soak it up, give me ways that I can like tangibly start to like to do this and use this in my world and, you know, my household and for my family and for myself. But I want to circle back just really quickly and like highlight what you were sort of sharing around the fact that when we're using plant medicine, we're using the whole plant, right? We're not extracting constituents of the plant. We're working with nature, as nature is so intelligently designed. And in that, our bodies know how to use what we're putting in it when we're using plants. And I think this comes back to, you know, even what you were sharing earlier about the fact that our bodies have been relating to and consuming plants for many, 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 many thousands of years. And so it doesn't really matter if you've never drunk dandelion tea before, if you've never, you know, gone and picked clavers, for example, before and turned it into I'm pretty sure, I don't want to like, I could be butchering this because it might be another plant, but I feel like we've had Becky Cole on the podcast before as well. She's incredible. And in her book, I'm pretty sure it was clavers that she was talking about making pesto out of. You can make almost pesto out of basically any green. Yeah. But I loved that in the way that, like, just using the plants and the weeds essentially that are in your garden and turning it into not just like a sprinkle of a dry flavor, but literally like the sauce that you're going to, or like the meal basically that you're able to cook with. So just don't discount your weeds, guys. Like, know what you're using, but like, you can literally eat them. Throw your nettles in.
Oh, nettle soup, yeah.
Yeah, like you throw it in. It's basically just like a spinach, right? So, and so medicinal, so full of minerals. But back to the point, Rach, you're getting a bit sidetracked. Just the fact that like our bodies know how to use and how to consume and digest and process plants. And the plants, as you said, they come fully formed and ready to be used and digested and processed, essentially. And that's not just coincidence. That's like many thousands of years relationship and like evolving together as well. Like our bodies have evolved to know how to work with and use these plants and consume these plants.
Yes, and you know, when we were exploring yarrow on the I teach a sort of year-long intensive course in awakening the herbal wisdom within you, and we were getting to know yarrow, and I mentioned this thing about, you know, in the skulls of Neanderthals from 60,000 years ago, and one of my students said, well, do you think yarrow's had to evolve over all of those years to, you know, to become what it is today? It does so many equal and opposite things. And we got into a really interesting conversation because, like you said, everything's interconnected. Everything's been evolving in relationship, yeah? So think about any plant in the hedgerows, in the wilds, what have you, that's not, you know, ornamentally cultivated for your garden. It's actively engaging. And there's a, you know, there's a kind of common narrative around survival of the fittest, and this is how it's all happened. But there's another option, which is that all these different parts of the ecosystems have evolved together to be of greater service to each other. So, you know, think about the rose bush over millenniums, your wild roses. Think about them becoming more and more, how can them, the berries be more nutritious for the birds? Which is, you know, in a way benefits them, of course, because then the seeds get spread and then more roses spread. But how can we be more nutritious? Or how can I provide better shelter? Or, okay, I'm getting used in this, you know, I'm getting lived in this way, so how, you know, or different birds find different plants that best suit them. You know, it's all of this all of this constant weaving together, and somehow I think we as humans have kind of lost that memo. You know, that like the hedgehogs aren't going around like trashing the hedgerows, like, oh, whatever, I'll just leave my, you know, whatever here. We're the only ones who create waste that is non-beneficial. You know, even like, you know, dung from other animals. And there are other creatures who then eat that. I mean, not that we need to go do that. Everything composts and goes back and is part of the cycle. So for me, it's just a no-brainer. Why would you want to put anything in or on your body then that isn't also part of that cycle? Because that's, you know, all the different pieces that are balanced, that are whole and complete, versus something that would just create more imbalance. Doesn't really make a lot of sense to me.
And what you're sharing, it's kind of making me think, I wish I could remember the word, but Sophie Strand talks about kind of the point you were just making as well in her book, The Flowering Wand, which is actually all about the divine masculine. But she kind of presents this idea. She basically
questions the survival of the fittest kind of concept as well. And this instead kind of offers this much more richer, nuanced sort of tapestry of what our ecosystems within ecosystems really are. And she kind of suggests, I remember her kind of writing about this cacophony of ecosystems, essentially, where it's not just one sound ringing out or like deafening over the rest, but it is every single element within an ecosystem is offering forth its own notes and creating one full harmonious or full harmony, essentially, which are constantly responding to one another and melding and merging with one another. And when we really do, I love that question, like, well, has Yarrow had to evolve? And it's like the thought, it's such a human thought, isn't it, where it's just like the assumption that the rose that we see today is the exact rose that, you know, grew, let's say, 10,000 years ago. And to a degree, we know that there's like the, you know, the old or like wild rose of the five petals. But to think that a plant or like a genus or like a species in any way, animal, like mammal, plant, whatever it may be, hasn't changed, we know it's not true. Like, we know it's kind of laughable. We have this like such a linear kind of concept. Yeah, just a little bit off topic of off of our like original conversation, but I love it. I'd love, just as we kind of do kind of move towards the end of this conversation, which has just been so beautiful. You know, we're kind of talking before we hit record as well, and it did come up earlier around our relationship to the messages in our body. The way that our body communicates, essentially, and how we read that, basically. And it's something that, you know, you kind of mentioned, as I said, before we jumped on the call. And I wonder if we could just hold a little bit of space to unpack this a little bit more, because I think it's so important when we're talking about the wider conversation here around, you know, plant and herbalism is, I want to say it's like, it's our sovereign health. It's our sovereignty in health and well-being. And to do that, we need to not only know how to tune into and to listen and, you know, have some body literacy to a degree, but also start kind of digging a little bit deeper in this piece around the note that I made. I'm just going to say it because it makes it as clear as possible. The note I wrote was the messages of the body and unpicking society's messages around them. And if I pass this to you, I'd love just if we could unpack that just a little bit.
So, and this actually goes back to something we were, you asked at the beginning about the, you know, our feminine intuition, our feminine right as healers. There's been, for everyone, but particularly for women who were often the medicine keepers, the healers in the home, the healers in the community, there's been a very systematic process over history of separating us from our bodies, of getting us to, convincing us to distrust ourselves and to not trust each other. And like you mentioned much earlier in the conversation, this deferring to an authority, somebody else who knows your body better than you. Now, yes, of course, there are some, you know, nooks and crannies of the body that are very, very complex. And sometimes you absolutely need somebody who has dedicated their life to that nook and cranny. Yes. But the message we start with on the course I teach is of the body is fever. And I call it breaking through socialized fear of nature's processes. So yes, we talk about, you know, how a fever works physiologically in the body. But that to me is like, that's the threshold that you cross over. That is the most common household thing in terms of illness. That is the thing that affects you yourself. It affects you as a parent. You know, the first time your child has a fever and you're sleep deprived and panicky and what have you. That point where the body is completing a natural process to address an imbalance, to address a pathogen, that is a healthy process. So I usually call them healthy fevers. And a lot of people go, what? What is that? But we've been socialized, fever, bad, stop. Which we could then also go down the rabbit hole, which we won't, of, and hurry up and get back to being productive and going to work or going to school or doing that thing that you think you need to be doing right now that's not listening to your body and giving your body space to process things. Your body is going through a natural process to get itself back in balance. The fever is not an illness in and of itself. It's a message, and it's one that we want to support. Now, yes, you know, you'll get to a point where there might be an extremely high temperature and you need to back it off a bit to give the body some time to rest. Just like sometimes in childbirth, you're doing it and you're doing it and you're doing it, and then you need to take a step back, have a rest so that you can resume because it's hard work. But that process, we've been told, squash it, stop it, don't listen to your body, carry on and keep doing. And there is that real fear, you know, especially, you know, mums, the first time they, with their first child has a fever, that fear of, oh my God, my child's got a fever. What happens if, what if, and it's getting, I've got to run to the doctor and I don't know what to do. You do know what to do. That core process, we have, as a society, ingested, I need to be afraid of what my body is doing to heal itself. I need to silence that message. And I need to defer to somebody else who knows better. This is, I think, the manifestation at its most fundamental point of women being told throughout the ages, it's not safe to trust your intuition. It's not okay for you, or it's not allowed to trust your own body, trust your inner knowing, trust your relationship with, say, your child or another family member, that you can support them through this. Because you might do harm. Heaven forbid. I mean, obviously nobody ever sets out to do harm. And it's important to know your boundaries of your levels of comfort, as well as, you know, some kind of key red flags and things is helpful. But these messages, you know, our body is trying to communicate with us when it sends us messages. When you've got a skin reaction, that is your body, like, literally writing a letter on your skin saying, I need some help here. When you've got pain, I think a lot of us have digested this message of, oh, I'm being punished. I've done something wrong. My body is rebelling against me. This sort of thing. Now, you've got a sensation that your body is saying, hey, over here. And it's a helpful sensation. Oh, great. This hurts. Now I know I need to pay attention. Detangling sensation from guilt, which is your body's got nothing. It's got no, you know, there's no guilt physiological function in the body that says, oh, yes, you know, make guilt. We do that. That's our minds. And I often say our minds are possibly the least intelligent part of our anatomy. But all of these sort of core messages that our bodies send us, that we've attached so much meaning to, that we've been given so many meanings to attach to that are then gateways to instilling fear within us and, you know, telling us that we need to go run to somebody else. You know, if your gut is off, if your appetite and digestion is off, listen to that. And you usually, if it's early on, you know, right, I ate that thing. Yeah, probably doesn't suit my constitution very well. Okay, I'm not going to keep eating it. But, you know, you've got these, as Michael Pollan says, these edible food-like substances that have been engineered to trigger these particular tastes and pleasure centers in our minds, and then we want more. Oh, but it makes me feel, my gut feel awful. Fine, take an antacid. You can silence that and crack on eating this stuff. And then a couple decades of that, and your digestion's really gone to pot, and then you're not quite sure how you've got there because you haven't felt it. You haven't felt it during that time. So removing that fear first, I think, of genuinely feeling the sensations in our body, detangling that from the messages society has given us about it, and then welcoming those sensations as messages that is our body really clearly saying, right, that I need some support here. Okay, this, I can do something about it. That's an invitation to be proactive rather than just pop a pill and crack on and ignore it and not taking on the offer of personal responsibility.
There's a piece here as well that's just like, you know, you mentioned pain. I think that's one of the biggest things. I think we're so afraid of pain and discomfort, but pain, we've been taught is essentially just to be avoided at all costs and to be shut down. And like, as you so beautifully shared, like so much of this is just the story of shut off the sensation, mm-hmm. whatever it may mm-hmm. be, not actually looking at why or what it may be underneath it, but like we see a sensation as the thing itself.
Yes.
And so if we can stop that, we've dealt with it. Mm-hmm. And which, you know, even just the way that we eat, like as you were talking, like, you know, I think even, you know, this is a larger conversation, but like the fact that we have seasonal foods available all year round, like our idea of food is really warped in the sense that it's just like food is just food. I can eat whatever I want whenever I want. Like that's, you know, if we're in a developed country, that's generally pretty true. And so our relationship to what we can put in our bodies and what our bodies think of that doesn't mean much. Like we just, and as you said, if we start to feel a discomfort or our body saying, hey, excuse me, we just will, you know, take a paracetamol or an antacid or something like to just quieten it down and shut it up so that we can keep going on the, you know, these tracks essentially that just keep us on the straight and narrow. There's a whole conversation there that's just so ginormous and I we just opened up at the end. But I really appreciate what you're really sharing there. And I think there's so much to kind of, I think the piece that ultimately comes through there that I'm sort of receiving is this self accountability and self responsibility piece as well, where, you know, if we have sensation of any kind, discomfort of any kind, to know that we actually have not just like the responsibility, but we have the capacity to meet it. And we really can meet it. And I say that from someone, you know, who's experienced many years of discomfort, particularly in the gut as well. And I know for people maybe who have had decades of chronic pain or anything like that, that can sound really hard.
Definitely. And, you know, just to quickly mention on pain, what we're not saying is you must walk around in pain at all times. Make sure you feel it. You know, like there are herbs that can help with, okay, great, there's pain. I understand it. I feel it. I'm going to, you know, calm that and work through the root cause of it. You know? But yeah, absolutely. It's opening up into that space is a journey in and of itself, I think. Mm.
Oh, Megan, before we do close, is there anything else that's kind of present on your heart that, you know, you feel like either we haven't kind of touched on that you would really love to weave into this conversation? Is there anything that you would just love to leave the listener with today before we do close?
I think just that invitation to trust yourself in allowing this knowledge that you have within you to wake up and bring it to the surface. It's in your body, but of course you need it active in your mind in order to be able to then practice it and bring it into your life, bring it into your home, get it muscle memory in your hands. So, you know, that niggling feeling of, oh, really, I want to get into this, I want to explore this, you know, go with it. And I often say to people who want to learn herbal medicine with me, I said, look, take things one step at a time. You don't have to learn 500 herbs in 500 minutes, you know, spend a whole week on the year-long course I teach. We spend a whole week on just one herb and that's it. You drink the tea all week. You get familiar with the tastes all week. Just that one plant. It's like meeting a new person and going from that introduction to acquaintance to friend to lifelong companion, you know, with each of these plants. You don't do that with 500 people at once. You do it with one or two people at a time. So treat the plants the same way. Yeah.
Thank you. Before we close, I wonder if you could share with us how we can connect with you, anything that you may have coming up or offerings, and how can we find you?
Sure, of course. So as I've mentioned, I teach workshops and courses across the seasons in Yorkshire in the UK. But if you're interested in going on a journey deep into herbalism with me, this year-long course I've mentioned, Awaken Herbal Wisdom, opens each September for enrollment to people on the waiting list. And I do have, we're in September, so I do have a cohort that's enrolling now, in September 2023. So it's for anybody who really wants to get herbalism into their bones, feel confident working with it in their daily lives, you know, pick apart all these socialized messages of things. I've got students who are totally new at it but really keen. I've got others who are on clinical herbal medicine practitioner qualification courses and they want to supplement with more experiential learning, everything in between. So of course I'll share the link, or you can DM me the word access on Instagram at Rhodes Roots and Remedies and I can pop that to you. And of course, if you're not ready for that yet, or you're not in the UK, as I know many of you will be in Oz, and you want to get a taste for getting into that whole taste thing with me, you can head to the link in the show notes, and there's exclusive access there to the recording of the first live lesson and the course book pages from that intensive course that takes you through the bitter taste, which is really, really deep. I won't say juicy because bitter is not really a juicy taste. So that's just an hour and you can understand the messages your body is sending you that's asking you for support with that taste. So you can start to really develop that skill of, okay, I'm listening to my body. It's giving me this message and then meet it where its needs are and respond to it. It's a real master key, I think, that skill to unlocking herbalism and getting it into your life. So yeah, definitely pop to the link and I'll get you all the details.
Amazing. I'm definitely going to check that out myself, I think. Good. Bitter herbs are one of those ones that's just like, of all things and all foods in general, bitter is what I struggle the most. I mean, of course I do, it's the point, but like it's something that, yeah, I think we can all do with like developing our relationship with bitter herbs. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Megan. It's been so beautiful having you here.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Weaving the Wild podcast. I'm walking my path here on Dja Dja Wurrung country, and I acknowledge the Dja Dja Wurrung elders past and present.